Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome. Good to have you all with us today. On our way to our conversation, it is our moment to look at a day in history. Today, we'll be hearing some music by this man. Today is the birthday of Howlin' Wolf, born in 1910, one of America's great singer-songwriters, who died in 1976. We'll be hearing Meet Me From the Bottom, which we'll play when we get back. Just one of the great singers of all time, I think, and really kind of set the stage for a lot of modern music. He and others did that. This is also the birthday of Richard Allen, of course, who was 1760, who ended up founding the African Methodist Episcopal Church, founder of the AME, born on this day. And on this day, Marcus Garvey, Ray Charles, and Jack Johnson all passed away in different years, 1940, 2004, and 1946, respectively. Men who all contributed mightily to society and how we view who we are in America. This is also the day John Kennedy signed the Equal Pay Act. We're not seeing the Lilly Ledbetter Act still being fought for in Congress, despite that happening in 1963. And it's also the anniversary of the end of the Six-Day War, which we'll be talking about more in the coming days. And I just wrote a blog I'll be posting this afternoon about the reflection on the Six-Day War and the boycott of Israel. We can talk about that later in the week. That'll be posted. This is the day that the Spanish-American War began. The U.S. Marines landed in the island of Cuba in 1898. They began the sojourn of the United States occupying much of the Caribbean and Central America and led to this sordid history you've had with Cuba since 1898. Well, let's leave it there for today. And there's so much more to talk about in this day in history, but that's what we have today in history, and we're going to jump into our – yes, Lester?
You know, one thing I think that directly relates to what we're talking about as far as surveillance is that the Apple II actually went on sale today.
In 1977. And
right.
It was right around the time I bought my first Apple II computer.
Yeah.
I've been using Apple and Mac ever since.
Yep.
But let's get to that. And you just hear the voice of Lester Spence. Dr. Lester Spence is co-hosting here the next couple hours with us. Associate Professor of Political Science and Africana Studies at Johns Hopkins University and the Center for Emerging Media Scholar in Residence. Good to have you in the studio, Lester.
Good to be here.
We're joined by phone by Sam Faddis. Sam Faddis is a former CIA operations officer. His latest book is Willful Neglect, The Dangerous Illusion of Homeland Security. Heidi Boghossian is with us, author of Spying on Democracy, Government Surveillance, Corporate Power, and Public Resistance, and executive director of the National Lawyers Guild. And Heidi, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Great to be here. Thanks.
And Lyndon McAllister, conservative media personality, speaker, and writer, who's at LyndonMcAllister.com. And Lenny, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
And you all are with us at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at SteinerShow@gmail.com. You can log on to the Facebook pages we have or tweet us at Mark Steiner, and we'll be reading what you have to say on the air, all that coming up. Let's just begin. I want to just start with a voice. And let us start with the voice of what happened yesterday, which is Edward Snowden came out saying he was the one who leaked the information to The Guardian, to Glenn Greenwald and others, about the NSA domestic surveillance. And then we'll talk a bit about the number of issues. One of the issues will be why we think there are so many people leaking in America today. Why has this become kind of phenomena in the last 4 to 8 years in America? What's happening with that and why? But more so than even during the Vietnam War, things are kind of exploding on that front. But also we'll talk about some of the back and forth, even with folks who are worried about surveillance, saying, is this particular one a big deal or not? We'll talk about that as well, and are there really security implications to all of this? What is the duty of a citizen to stand up when he thinks something's awry or she thinks something's awry? Is this really, Sam Faddis, dangerous to our national security? Are we making too much about this?
I'm sorry, what was the question, Mark?
Sam, are we making too much out of this from your perspective as a former CIA operations guy? I mean, where do you see these kind of leaks or these kind of exposures of what some people think is an incorrect use of our governmental power? Others thinking that this is a breach of ethics at the very least. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think when you talk about this whole issue of electronic surveillance, that there is in the press a tremendous amount of confusion and often misinformation, meaning that it tends to be an arcane subject, even the legal aspects of what the various provisions of the Patriot Act are like. You know, if you're not working with it every day, it becomes almost incomprehensible. So there is a lot of confusion. There's a lot of distortion. Do I think we're making too much out of it? No, I think it's an important conversation we ought to be having. Have we crossed the line to where we should not be in terms of surveillance? I don't know. I know that focused on this because technology is such that, you know, the government has the capacity to suck up almost everything. And I don't think just saying that we're going to trust the government to do the right thing at all times is an option. You know, I mean, that if we thought that was an option, we wouldn't have a Fourth Amendment.
Heidi Boghossian?
I think this is an enormous problem implicating something you alluded to a few minutes ago, and that is why so many leaks. Part of the reason is so much information is now classified under the Obama administration that our current news media, which is really monopolized by several large corporations, is in many times just the voice piece for the government. So we have an increasingly secretive government, a public who is really caught up in electronic gadgets that gather their data on really everything they do throughout the day. And they're handing over their data to corporations that aggregate it and sell it to third parties, including, as we've seen, big contractors that are doing a lot of our national security work for us. So I think that we have a public that is increasingly kept in the dark by a very secretive government, and we're relying on leakers for this information because some people of conscience are willing to step forward at enormous personal risk.
Go ahead, Lester.
So in 2010, the Washington Post ran a series on this issue called Top Secret America. And as of 2010, I'll just read some of the findings. Some 1,300 government organizations and over 1,900 private companies work on programs related to counterterrorism, homeland security, and intelligence in about 10,000 locations across the United States. And an estimated 854,000 people, nearly 1.5 times as many people as live in Washington, D.C., hold top secret security clearances. I'm curious as to whether we're missing the larger story, where the part of it is about leaks, but whether part of it is this growing security apparatus that we just don't seem to have a handle on.
Well, this is the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned us about in 1960, and I think that for the longest time, initially during the first several decades of that era, we were looking at the buildup against the Soviet Union and the rush towards possible impending nuclear war. But now that has morphed into something different. That has morphed into a state where that military-industrial complex also means cameras throughout cities. It also means access to your cell phone, access to your emails. It also means the justified, and I put that in air quotes, the justified intrusion into everyday American lives and being able to say that this keeps you safe, where in a free society you still have, between God's free will and the freedom that's protected by the Constitution, the freedom for men to do harm. And that's why we have to have a strong society and a strong moral fabric to protect us against that, not an intrusive government. So I think that when you start looking at this, this is just nothing more than the military-industrial complex morphing into a 21st century version of itself. And I think that people that are more focused on President Obama or more focused on President Bush need to take a step back and put this into historical context and understand that this has been going on since the 1950s. It's something that Eisenhower, who was respected by both sides of the aisle, warned us about. And it really hasn't slowed down since then.
So, Heidi, let me let you jump back in here, we'll open the phones after this at 410-319-8888, Ray being our first caller up. David Simon, who produced The Wire and is a commentator, a former police reporter, had a blog out, and part of the blog he put out was that he thought in some ways, and if I'm wrong about this, Lester, since you read it more thoroughly than I, chime in, but one of the things he wrote about was saying that he thinks we're in some ways making much ado about nothing. That while it could be a danger, this is information in the aggregate. It's not about specifics. And that we are opening ourselves up, just given everything we do, from our GPSs to using our cards to get through our Easy Pass and everything else that we do, we are setting ourselves up to whittle away at our privacy. And this is just a little piece of that, and it's not as big as we think. And I think that it's not the crux of the issue. How would you respond to that?
I would say that we're definitely exposed to this in every aspect of our daily lives, but that doesn't mean we can't, number one, protect ourselves by practicing what I would call good electronic hygiene, being a little mindful of the information that we willingly put out on Facebook and social media. Number two, I think information gathered in the amounts that it is poses a few risks. One is that it may not make us safer because how is it being analyzed? Is it being effectively analyzed? If there's too much information, it runs the risk of sort of a glut of data. And I think a danger is that with that much information, it does give authorities the ability to then use it for reasons that are not related to national security, such as profiling individuals with certain political beliefs. That is a threat to democracy, and we have to be careful about that.
Sam,
this is Dr. Lester Spence.
Yeah, Sam Fattis, along those lines, what if – so I deal with data, right, just public opinion stuff. But the first thing I thought about was just the type of state, even as large as the security state has grown, it would seem that to really mine this data, you would need a government apparatus far larger than what we have. And it's not clear we're going to get that. So how would you respond to the argument that, well, the thing is there's so much data that there's no way possible that the state could use this in ways that that critics suggest it could be used?
Yeah, to be honest with you, I think there's a lot of truth to that. I mean, you know, Washington has a tendency when they confront a problem to throw money at it. And it has become big business for contractors to make money off of, you know, not telling them that you're wasting that money, but finding ways to give them something for it. Absolutely true. You know, we collect too much. A lot of it goes unanalyzed. We have overreached. That's not me saying that there's not a need for surveillance in certain cases or that doesn't have value, but absolutely. The whole apparatus is too big, too cumbersome, too inefficient, too wasteful.
How would you respond to that, Lenny?
Well, I think that, number one, what we have learned is that Washington, in many instances, exists for its own purpose, and that government exists for its own purpose. And even on both sides of the aisle, we have seen the expansion of government. I think that, again, when you look at the Tea Party movement, people were angry at the Republicans 2006 in that midterm because President George W. Bush and the Republicans expanded government, and it just has continued on from there. So it is not that far of a logical and political leap to say that with maybe one more terrorist attack that there's been a new push to say we have to analyze this information better. We have accumulated this information, and you could put it in the context of April, for example. We had all this information. This has been going on for the last 7 years, but between ignoring the direct warning from the Russians and not analyzing the information properly, we missed the terrorist brothers that ended up harming so many Americans up in Boston during the marathon. Therefore, we need to put this new policy into place. We need to put this new initiative into place. We're going to spend this new amount of money. And let's just be frank, if we look at what's been going on in the media, the Republicans would get behind it. Let's say it happened under President Obama. The Republicans would get behind President Obama and call this a bold move to keep America safe. The Democrats would probably gnash their teeth but go along and sign along with this. And now you have not only the information that's accumulated that people are currently saying we can't analyze, you now have that already in store. And now a new program or new processes, set of processes, I should say, coming into place to analyze that, and everything that people are criticizing and afraid of could become a reality. We're not that far away from that. I would say if we had one or two more attacks that got through and harmed Americans, I think people would acquiesce to it enough, and it just continues to go down a very dangerous path, something that, to me, is very un-American.
So let me play this very quick clip that we want to play at the top of the hour, and I want to go right to Heidi after this clip because talk about what this means. This is Edward Snowden explaining why he did this leak.
When you're in positions of privileged access, like a systems administrator for these sort of intelligence community agencies, you're exposed to a lot more information on a broader scale than the average employee. And because of that, you see things that may be disturbing, But over the course of a normal person's career, you'd only see one or two of these instances. When you see everything, you see them on a more frequent basis, and you recognize that some of these things are actually abuses. And when you talk to people about them in a place like this, where this is the normal state of business, people tend not to take them very seriously and, you know, move on from them. But over time, that awareness of wrongdoing sort of builds up, and you feel compelled to talk about it. And the more you talk about it, the more you're ignored, the more you're told it's not a problem, until eventually you realize that these things need to be determined.
Heidi, let me bring you back in here. I'm just curious about your sense of the significance of all of this.
About the leak?
Yeah. I mean, what is it really telling us? And as somebody who deals with civil liberties and has written the things you've written, what is it about this specific leak, this specific incident here of the NSA that you think is so important for us to wrestle with?
I think it's important that an individual had really the conscience and was brave enough to come forward, because he saw our system working contrary to what the founders of this country and the writers of our Constitution intended. And as he said, you get so used to it when you're in the business, and we have so many military contractors really performing intelligence for us on a daily basis. It is a big business. I think a lot of people say, well, there's so much information out there. This is the price we pay. We give up our freedoms. And as Obama just said, you know, implying, as a constitutional scholar, oddly, that you have to decide between security and between civil liberties. And I think you can strike a balance. That's what this country stands for. And that's what Mr. Snowden is saying. He's willing to face really life imprisonment, or even if it was under the Espionage Act, it's punishable by death, really a dramatic change to his life to make this information public. Because I think there have been hints, as everyone's been saying, that we are in a security surveillance state. But really, the extent of it is only coming out in these leaks, which, you know, we have Jeffrey Sterling, Thomas Drake, so
right.
many whistleblowers, Bradley Manning, that are facing life in prison and ruined reputations for doing what they think is the right thing and what I think many Americans would agree with.
Well, I mean, and that's what we want to explore a little bit in the next half an hour. I might even ask you to stay on for a minute, Heidi, just to explore that with us. But one of the things that Lester brought up a moment ago, I want to go back to, and which has to do with these leaks. And we keep saying that there's not enough manpower or computing power in our government to use this information really in a very hard way against us, or, you know, that it's not coordinated enough. But, Sam, let me challenge that a minute. I mean, we're talking about almost 1 million people who are employed by security apparatus in this country, not including all the contractors, who also are not doing a lot of work, Booz Allen or Blackwater, whoever those other groups might be. And B, they in this information, they have keywords they looked at. And one of the arguments that the administration has made, that President Obama has made and others have made, is that, look, we used this data and we were able to intercept this piece that went to Peshawar, that it was very specific, using kind of keywords with people we knew who were part of al-Qaeda or close to al-Qaeda, be able to send it back to the originating in Denver, find the guy who did it in Denver, who they say was going to blow up subways in New York in a backpack, and they got it before he did it. So to say that this apparatus can't do that, aren't we being naive here, Sam? I mean, the apparatus can do that.
Well, I'm not trying to minimize the impact on civil liberties by saying that, but I'm not. I think that the civil liberties concern. I mean, first of all, the fact that they have the data in and of itself, I think, is already an invasion of your privacy, whether they're looking at it or not. But I don't accept the assertion that in order to intercept some terrorist communications, in order to focus on some communications links, that means by default that we have to suck up all data in general. I mean, I think there are people who have convinced themselves that that's the case. I think there are people who are willing to accept billions of dollars to build systems that can do that. But I don't accept that, in other words, that if we don't do this on the scale that we are doing it now, that the answer is that you are then accepting that Americans are going to be killed. I think there's a lot of room in between on that continuum.
So the question I have for all of you now is, and everybody jump here, Heidi, I'd like you to lead the way, is then how do you, should you be thinking about how you design a system that, A, goes after folks who may actually want to do us harm without affecting our civil liberties, without knowing everything about having the ability to know everything about every email and phone call I make. You know, if I make a phone call to Afghanistan for a story, they're gonna say, oh, there's Mark Steiner making a call to Afghanistan. So, I mean, so how do we protect that?
Well, I think clearly technology plays an enormous role in helping us, especially with globalization. So we need good technology systems, but we also need good old-fashioned detective work, following leads, and sort of better management and internal organization and coordination. We've created fusion centers. They bring in corporate partners. I think there are some problems with those. They've been criticized by reports that the government, the GAO, has come out with. So I think we need to work on refining our communication systems internally, but really follow credible leads about criminal activity. Don't go on a fishing expedition. There's a lot of focus on sort of domestic terrorism and criminalizing what many of us call just plain old free speech in this country, because I think it sounds like an easy win. You go after a vocal animal rights activist and you depict them as terrorists, and that placates the public to a certain degree. But that, to me, is a distraction from real old-fashioned gumshoe work.
If I may add to that, Mark, let's put this into a political context. Would we feel better about this? And I mentioned this in an earlier interview. Would we feel better about this if the IRS scandal didn't come up? Would we feel better about this if the AP scandal didn't come up? Would we feel better about this if we didn't have a congressman in New York asking for the presidential term limits to be removed so that we can keep presidents on, ongoing and ongoing? Would we feel better about this if we didn't have a Congress that, even when there's a 10% approval rating, has a 90% reelection rate? What we're looking at are people that are appointing these individuals and working with this data that get to stay in the Senate sometimes for 40 years. They get to stay in the Congress for 20 to 30 years.
Okay.
So you're having people accumulate this information that aren't going anywhere. So now you have one class of individuals that are basically keeping an eye on everybody else, and you can't even get them out of there between gerrymandered and the way politics are running America today.
Lester, we have about 2 minutes left in the segment, or maybe a minute. Go ahead.
So for research for the story, I found an example. There's a guy named Larry Hunter, who's a grad student in 85 studying artificial intelligence at Yale. And he was one of the first people to really write on this. And so somebody asked him an interviewed him to see, to what extent his current predictions or his predictions back in 85 fits now. And what he said was that he actually tried to fight the personal information is property battle. At least intellectually, he tried to fight it. And we lost that a long time ago. What I'm trying to figure out is, what type of arguments would we deploy to get regular people to say, wow, this is something that we should at the very least be concerned with? Because it's not clear to me that people out that this story is as big just amongst regular people as it is amongst those of us who are kind of intellectuals about it.
We have to take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk about that. I think that you have a point there. We'll pick up on that point and go to Michael, our first caller up. I ignored other callers. We won't from here on in. 410-319-8888. We'll be right back as we continue our look at the NSA and domestic surveillance and what it really means to us. Stay with us.
Well, now what you gonna do?
There we go, 103rd birthday of Hal and Wolf. And you ask the question, what you going to do? Which we're trying to figure out this hour with our guests. Hal and Wolf couldn't join us, but maybe one day he will from the grave. Who knows? Dr. Lester Spence is in the house. He's co-hosting this today, Associate Professor of Political Science and Africana Studies at Johns Hopkins University and our Center for Emerging Media's Scholar in Residence. Sam Faddis, former CIA Operations Officer, author of numerous books, including Willful Neglect, The Dangerous Illusion of Homeland Security. Heidi Boghossian, author of Spying on Democracy, Government Surveillance, Corporate Power, and Public Resistance, Executive Director of the National Lawyers Guild. Lenny McAllister, a conservative media personality, public speaker, and writer, though I don't like pigeonholing him like that. I've come with a way of saying it. 410-319-8888. On the way to the phones, Heidi, can you tackle what Lester was saying at the break? the whole issue of whether or not we, there's just, most people in America just don't really look, are not looking at this and not caring about this. This doesn't become a major issue for many people.
Right. And I think one of the issues that people need to be aware of is that everything they do creates sort of an electronic profile of them. And there is a sort of discussion about whether data is property, whether that is something that can be abused by others, identity theft being one example. I think this is all emerging in terms of the law, which I think really isn't keeping up with the technological development. So I think the people just need to be aware that everything they do is being monitored and even more ominously stored and can be, you know, things that they've corresponded about or done online can be gathered years later and used for purposes that we might not even be able to imagine right now.
Who's about to say something? Was that you, Sam?
That's me. It's Lenny.
Make it tight because I want to get to these callers. Go ahead.
I'll make it very quick. I think that, unfortunately, the Dr. Spence's point, it's something that most Americans are not going to focus on, but that's a symptom of the reactive politics that we have in America. I mean, most Americans don't react to anything until the horse is out of the barn, and this, unfortunately, is another situation like that, and we may be able to rein it back in. We may not, but more often than not, we see this with any type of political story or scandal or anything along those lines. So it's not unique to this. It's just indicative of the type of citizen we have right now, which is a very sad state that we're in.
Let me go to the phones at 410-319-8888. And Michael, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, Mike Scott here, and Dr. Spence. What he was said before, Dr. Spence talked about the concentration of power is really interesting. And I think there's another question we should be asking, because the difference between 85 and now, what we know with Moore's law is that technology will only exponentially increase. So what we don't have capacity for today, in 10 years we will. And Booz actually wrote another book called Mega Communities, where they it came out as they ran these war games that civic society needed to be strengthened in order to make better decisions. So I think one of the things that we're not asking is, how can big data, what's the flip side of all this? How can big data be used for greater participatory democracy? How can we use it to hold others accountable given the concentration of power that the gentleman discussed? Because we know that it's only going to increase. And so what are the opportunities for democracy to increase given the technology that could not have been envisioned by the founding fathers? And I think that's something that we need to be trying to head off at the
right
path. Years down the road.
Michael, that's interesting. I'm going to hear Dr. Spence on this, but let me first go to Sam Faddis. Sam, I'm going to you first just because you both, as a former CIA operative who has worked in that world intensely for your entire career, but you also have this kind of wary look at big government, I've seen from your other writing. So I'm curious how you balance it out in democracy. Maybe it can't be balanced out, some people would argue, Sam.
I don't believe that it cannot be balanced, Mark. I think that absolutely we can find a balance between security and personal liberty. It requires vigilance. It requires the involvement of the community. If your attitude as a citizen is that you're just going to trust the government is going to reach the right conclusions and take care of you, then I would submit that you're not really paying attention to what's going on in the world around you. You know, you need to be involved, and we need to demand that balance and not just accept assurances from bureaucrats that they're going to do the right thing.
Yeah, I think one way to go about this is, well, it has to be a couple of fronts. Like in this case, I think we need to make the argument to supporters of the administration that this isn't just about critiquing the administration, right? That this is actually larger than Obama, given that it goes back to his predecessor. So that, because otherwise it just reads like, to use slang, it just reads like hating, right? So that's the first thing. It's like you have to figure out how to be able to say to people who support the administration that this is larger than Obama. The second thing is, it might be interesting to think about how we'd actually become more transparent by making everything available. David Brin is a science fiction author, but he's also a PhD. I think he got his PhD in one of the hard sciences. He wrote a book called The Transparent Society some time ago, and his central argument was, given that once you open this door, you can't peel it back, that the best way to do it is to open it to everybody. That is, we create a more free society and a more kind of secure society by making data available to everybody in the hopes that such a dynamic would would kind of cancel out the power of the government over us, right?
But how many of us can really understand or even use that data? If they had access to it.
That's a step. That's just a step, right? You're right.
Heidi, I mean, as a civil libertarian leader, what's your perspective on this?
Well, I think these are interesting points. You know, the creators of the internet envisioned, really, I think, a limitless new frontier, and one that would open communities rather than destroy them. One of the problems, I think, in general, when you get corporate involvement and a government afraid of certain information coming out, is that you see punitive laws based at individuals who maybe upload certain kinds of information or try to share things, so that we see a fight for control over the internet. And I think all of these issues about activism and how we communicate with one another, share information, are all implicated in what's happening now. There's a tension between wanting more information to come out and government and security agencies being concerned that too much may jeopardize our national security. But I think there is a balance in between. We can have, hopefully, both.
Well, I mean, I think that's a point that we really have to wrestle with, and how we get to that kind of society. Because I think being the jaundiced one at times, Lester, I wonder if we really can. Because once you let this out, because there's a lot of power, as you've written about, Heidi, between the corporate world of information and the governmental world of information, and our technological abilities to really mine that data is growing every day and changing. And in between China, which we'll talk about later in the show, and its growing power and the dangers people see, real or otherwise, about terror, these are things that are not going to be so easy for us to resolve.
I think there are individual acts of resistance. I love the example of a school child who refused to submit to a palm scan to get into her cafeteria.
I like that
lunch.
Too. Yes.
Yeah, me too. Yes.
We need more of these. They inspire people,
yes.
And they show us we're human.
I agree, and I think that that's where we're going to pick up when we start talking about Bradley Manning in this next part of our program. And I think that we're just beginning to touch this. We look forward to these guests coming back and join us again. Dr. Lester Spence stays with us as co-hosting the show here today with me, and I'm loving having him in the studio. Our Center for Emerging Media's scholar in residence and associate professor of political science and Africana studies at Johns Hopkins University. I want to thank Heidi Boghossian, author of Spying on Democracy, Government Surveillance, Corporate Power, and Public Resistance, and executive director of the National Lawyers Guild, one of those who's always been in the forefront of battles for civil liberties. Heidi, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Sam Faddis, former CIA operations officer, noted author, latest book, Willful Neglect, The Dangerous Illusion of Homeland Security, who got up very early. He's in California right now to join us, and I want to thank my daughter, Maisie, for saying, why don't you call Sam Faddis and have him on? She was right. Sam, thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
Always good to have you. Lennon McAllister, commentator, personality, public speaker. Always great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me. God bless.
And we're going to take a short break and come right back. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about Bradley Manning. Stay with us.